Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get-it-all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Jake Lyman, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Frank Schwab from Yahoo will be with us a little bit later in the program at 8:30, and we will get into the Titans and NFL headlines with him. So looking forward to that. The NHL draft is coming up later this week, and we will have Barry Trotz on with Jared later this afternoon. I will be hosting, along with Max Herz, a draft show coming up on Friday night starting at 6 o'clock, live from Bridgestone Arena. So we are very much looking forward to the draft coming up later this week. Tune in with us on Friday night at 6 o'clock, as the Predators at the moment have 3 picks in the first round, including at number 5. And, Jake, we've had a lot of different thoughts and discussion points today from Predators fans on what they'd like to see happen at pick number 5 and the importance of this draft coming up. You know, I heard Jared talking about it yesterday, and he talked about, you know, this draft, if he had to rank it in terms of importance of what he cares about right now, like the team next year and how they do, is a 4 or 5 out of 10, and this draft is a 10 out of 10. I don't know that I necessarily get there, but I understand the point of the Predators just have not had very many top 5 picks in the history of their franchise, and this is an opportunity to land a potential franchise-changing player. Now, we'll see if where they're picking at number 5 actually has that in the cards or not, and if one of those guys ends up being a franchise changing player like in Alex Barkov or somebody like that, we'll see. But no doubt about it, whoever the Predators select at number 5, we are immediately going to view as that kind of top level prospect in their organization. And we've talked about this several times. They're whatever draft guru you want to consult, and Adam Vingan joined us earlier. They'll have Scott Wheeler on their show tomorrow from The Athletic. They've talked about the Predators pipeline. They've got a good pipeline. They've got some good prospects. Obviously, they got a lot of picks coming up. They don't really have an elite player in their pipeline. So is this a chance where Barry Trotz and his staff are going to get an elite player? A lot of conversation about James Hagans, which we went through earlier in the show. I'm really interested, Jake, to see if he's there at number 5. And if he is, are the Predators dead set on Hagans, or if somebody else is available, whether it's Frondell or McQueen or whoever, is there a decision that Barry Trotz is going to have to make, and what sort of contingencies have they gone through heading into all that?
Yeah, I just saw Alex Doherty put out an article, too, saying basically if James Hagans is sitting there at 5, it should be a no-brainer for the Preds. And, man, we could have a meltdown of epic proportions if Hagans is on the board and the Preds don't take him, which, with how young these guys are coming out, and again, this isn't the NFL draft where you kind of know what a guy's going to be right off the bat for your team. These guys are still a couple of years away, so there shouldn't be any meltdown, because it's kind of like the MLB draft where, yeah, you might have an idea, and baseball is getting a little closer to NBA and NFL because like half of the top 10 from last year's draft are already playing big league baseball. But it's still the same as you're not getting a ready-made product. And the guy you take at 5 on Friday, it may not be the one guy you want, but 2 years down the road, it may end up being the smart pick. So I think Hagans should be the pick if he's there at 5, but I also don't think Hagans doesn't seem like a complete surefire star. So if Trotz has a guy that he likes better, maybe there is a reason to pick somebody other than Hagans, but it does seem like that is the most likely scenario if he's there at 5 that he ends up being the Preds pick.
Our buddy Predemption in the YouTube chat throwing this out there, and it is something that I've thought about that is going to be very interesting to see on Friday how it plays out. He says, if the Preds use all 3 of their first-round picks on Friday, I hope they take Blake Fiddler with one of them in their 20s, in the picks in the 20s, the son of Vern Fiddler, obviously. Fiddler, actually, you know, I think it's right in the range where he could go. He's 6'4", and he's a right-shot defenseman. And he's not going to help him next year if he gets drafted there. But, like, they – I saw also a draft profile thrown out there by The Athletic a couple weeks – or last week about what all these teams need. And with the Predators, it was the headline was everything. They need everything. They need defensemen in their pipeline too. And they need, like, particularly some higher-end defensemen in their pipeline. I'm excited about Molendijk. Beyond that, I'm not exactly sure what they've got. I like Gibson. But they could use maybe a guy or two more that are kind of in that profile in their defenseman pipeline. Fiddler could be that guy. I think, you know, in the 20s where the Predators are picking is right around where he could go. I think he's 28th from Bob McKenzie. He's 23rd by Elite Prospects. I think the overall, like, composite ranking, they've got him at 27. So he could be in that range. And he would be, you know, a first-round draft pick who was born in Nashville. I mean, he's going to make some history coming up on Friday. And grew up around the Predators. Also spent a lot of time in Dallas when Fiddler was down there. But that could be something that the Predators also do if they use all three of their first-round picks.
Would we have a big issue if they did end up going goalie with one of those later first-round picks? Is that too much of a reach? Because I've seen a couple, or the one in particular, mocked to them in the 20s for some goalie depth given.
I wouldn't hate it.
But
because you've got – I guess I wouldn't hate it because you've got three first-round picks. I'd probably like to see that more in the second. If you're
okay.
Look, they need a goalie in their pipeline. They do. Like, they're going to take at least one goalie.
Yeah, I guess they have
–
was it Magnus Crona?
Yeah.
Like, in Milwaukee?
Right. They're going to take a goalie in this draft. I mean, Jeff Kelty and their front office have said that. Like, they're not being shy about it. They're going to take a goalie.
We'll have to see how high they decide to do that.
That's the thing. How high is it going to be? And, you know, obviously it wasn't that long ago that they took a goalie in the first round in Yaroslav Askarov and then have since moved on from him. So they need a goalie. I'm interested to see where exactly that lands. I would probably prefer them to go some combination of centerman at number 5, defenseman with one of those other two first-round picks, and then probably another
26.
Winger.
Yeah.
So that would be what I would like to see them do. We'll see how the board falls that
way. And who knows if they make these picks, but having three picks from 23 to 34 gives you kind of the flexibility of maybe you can wait on the goalie because it's more likely that those skaters are going to go earlier.
Correct.
So maybe at 34, that's where you end up seeing them look for a goaltender.
Matt from Camden asking if there's any scenario where the Predators can move up to number 3 or number 2 even in this draft. Is there a scenario? Yes. Is it at this point pretty unlikely? I would also say yes. Like, the likelihood is they're picking at number 5. I think Matthew Schaefer's going 1 to the Islanders. So then the question, the real question is, what does San Jose want to do after that? Because San Jose needs a defenseman. My advice to San Jose would just be to draft Michael Mesa and worry about it later. But you've got, at that point, you would have Will Smith, who you drafted in the top 5. Obviously, Macklin Celebrini, who you drafted number 1 overall. And then you would have Michael Mesa. That's 3 really high picks at forward. But, I mean, I would probably do that if I were them, if Schaefer's off the board. But we'll see. We'll see if they decide to move back. I would put it to you this way. Most years, I would say it's almost impossible for the Predators to move up. I'm not going to throw impossible out there this year. I'd still say I'd put it at about a 98% chance they're picking at number 5.
I don't know. Do they have, like, a draft trade value chart in the NHL like they do for the NFL? Like, what would it cost the Preds to move up? Would it be, like, all 3 of their first-round picks to move from 5 to 2?
Yeah, and probably a little bit more. Like, it'd probably be more than that. Just depending on who you're dealing with. Like, some of it would be, like, San Jose. How willing are you to get out of there? Like,
that's
if
true.
You're just wanting to get out of there and stockpile some picks, then maybe that would help you. But typically top 5 picks don't get moved around a whole lot just because it's such a crapshoot with the draft that when the top 5 you feel like are more of a sure thing, people tend not to mess with that all that much. Not that they're always right, but it's more of a sure thing, particularly in the NHL, with about the top 8. And then beyond that, it becomes – Huh. I guess we'll see.
Throwing darts.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you're drafting 17 and 18-year-olds. There's a lot that can happen between 17 and 23, right? I mean, there's a lot that could go down that way. 615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to on the Predators draft. We will do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025-1063, the game.
What does number five do for you? Where do you head from there?
Well, we're in the process of all the meetings right now upstairs. I sat in with our scouts today. I feel that even at the moving back a couple spots in number five, we're going to get a good player. I don't have any doubt about that. What it might do, depending on once we get the order, we're probably going to put a couple of plans into place. I'll have to make some phone calls and follow through with some of our plans. So. I think, when we get through with all the process, we have the combine coming up, as well as some interviews with the players, especially what we think is probably the guys will be in probably the top 10 for sure. We'll do a lot of background checking, do all that. And once we get that in order, we'll try to figure out what everybody else is doing and have a few plans in place to go in the direction we need.
That's Barry Trotz after the NHL draft lottery. Preds picking the number five coming up on Friday in the draft. Taking your thoughts on that pick, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. I got one texter that says, James Hagans, too little. I think in a previous conversation on DVD, he was talking about he's small and soft like Evangelista. So we'll see what happens on that front. Caleb on the text line. Says, I just have a feeling Trotz has a big plan up his sleeve, and if he has an opportunity, he's going to do something. And that goes back into what we talked about yesterday of what is the plan for Barry Trotz in terms of adding to this group this offseason. I would put it to you this way. I don't think there's any chance that they're moving off number five. I mean, I guess other than the opportunity to move up, but they're not trading number five for help right now. I'll put it to you that way. I would be floored by that. And frankly, I just think that would be really bad.
It would make almost no sense.
Yeah. So I would not do that. I don't anticipate the Predators are going to do that. You know, the other two picks in the first round is interesting. I mean, do you really need to make both of those picks? I would say no, you don't if you're the Predators. Now, could you get some help there? If nothing else materializes around you right now, sure, absolutely. But it's not like, those later first-round picks are just going to be absolute surefire stars in the NHL. So if the right deal presents itself and you can use those later first-round picks as ammunition, maybe to pick up a right-shot defenseman or to pick up one of those players that Adam Vingan was talking about earlier that's kind of in that mold of mid-20s and maybe it hasn't worked out somewhere else, but you can see the talent is just unbelievable and you're taking a risk. Maybe you package some of that together. Maybe there's a discussion that they're having with the team right now that we don't know about that they're trying to put some package around and they want to use those picks. I don't know. I'm interested to see how that part of it plays out. There's also this draft as a whole, generally speaking, does not seem to be viewed very favorably, very highly. So are teams really looking for more picks at the later part of the first round in this draft? That's a legitimate question. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out for the Predators this year.
With the way the Preds are built right now, you kind of have to balance finding a way to make this team competitive next year while also building up the future. And you definitely have to pick somebody in the top five. I think that's non-negotiable. But do you need four picks in the top 34?
That's the question.
I would probably say no. And if there's any way that you could send one or two of those picks to get somebody who can help you right now, that's probably the right balance in terms of with as much age and, the contracts you have on the books right now, you do have to find a way to build out this team for this upcoming season. And maybe that's the best ammunition you have to do that. You're not going to use five. I'm with you there. You can't trade five, and there's probably not many players out there who are worth the fifth overall pick. But
not if, the teams are willing to trade.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But if you could send 23 and or 26 and or 34 and go get somebody who can help the team right now, I think that would probably be the right balance for Barry Trotz.
Well, and look, if that doesn't materialize and they end up making all those picks, then good for them. That's good. I mean, that's, you know, picking first round players is not a bad thing.
You don't want to force anything, for sure.
Right. So you don't want to just trade it for the sake of trading it. But I guess what I'm saying is those later picks in the first round, based on the players who are going to be there, do any of those guys change the equation so much where you're in your prospect pool where you're just like, well, we just have to do it? I think the answer to that is no.
I don't think it turns you into right. one of the best farm systems in all of hockey. It doesn't make you have this elite prospect pool to take
right.
the 25th best player in this class.
Now, number five does. Like, you know, number Agreed. Five, you know, whether it's Hagans or Frondell, whoever they end up at number five is going to be a very good player. And then the question is going to be, okay, exactly how good? That's what it boils down to. But you know, regardless of who they end up with number five, like with the guys who are going to be available in that range, I think they're going to be getting a pretty good player. But there's levels to it. Like there's a difference between a pretty good player and an elite franchise cornerstone player. And are they getting that? That's going to be the question.
Yeah. And at five, you're hoping you're going to add the top prospect in your system. Like that should be what happens, is that you go get a guy who immediately becomes the gem of your prospect pool. At 23 and 26, you're probably just adding a bunch more, maybe a little better than lottery tickets, but they're kind of lottery tickets when you're taking them at 17, 18 years old, yep. and they're not considered a generational type right. player. They're all kind of lottery tickets. Maybe they pan out and end up being great players for you, but more often than not, they either end up just being guys, or some of them may not even make it to the NHL level.
Well, and the bottom line is, and this is true, I think, in every sport, in every draft, I think it's more true when it relates to hockey and baseball specifically. Like, you're drafting these kids so young, and there's so many of them, that a lot of it really is a crapshoot at some point. Like, you know, the Lightning drafted Nikita Kucherov, I think it was 58th overall, okay? And he has turned into probably at worst like the fifth best player in the NHL. Like he's yeah. really, really good. And you look at some of the guys that were taken before him, including I think the Predators took Mika Salamaki in the second round before Nikita Kucherov. Yeah, Kucherov was taken at 58th overall by Tampa in the second round. And at 52 that year, the Predators took Mika Salamaki. And right before Kucherov, like there's a laundry list of guys that you look on the list at, and you're like, well, I've never heard of any of those guys. Like, who are these people? But that's what the NHL draft kind of turns into. And number one, you need a good front office and a good scouting staff to be able to identify some of these players. But a lot of this is like, man, there's so much that changes between the time when they're 17, 18 years old, and what some of these guys grow into being at 23, 24. And sometimes you hit the jackpot, and the truth of the matter is it's been a long time since the Predators have done that. And they need two or three of those. Like they need to really hit, obviously, on their number five pick overall, but they also need to find somebody later in the draft that ends up being way better than they thought they were going
to
be.
Yeah, you'd love for the 34th overall pick to 2 years down the road turn into one of the top prospects in hockey. But it doesn't happen very often, but it has happened before. And you're right. In order to build a sustainable championship contender, you do need to hit on some of these no. lottery tickets and some of these throws at the dartboard that typically a mid-second round pick or an early second round pick isn't going to be a game changer, but when they are, that's how you turn into one of these teams that's contending for the Stanley Cup every year.
We'll be joined by Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and all things NFL. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Jacksonville. Pregame at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Robbie Stanley alongside Jake Lyman, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking a little NFL, and to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Frank Schwab to the program from Yahoo Sports. Frank, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good. What's going on?
Not a whole lot, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Frank, I want to start on the Titans here with you. Obviously, Cam Ward going number one overall. And when you're going to a team that is drafting number one overall, that means the situation is not overly great around you most of the time. So what do you make of the situation that Cam Ward is walking into? And as you have watched Cam Ward kind of throughout this entire process, what's the type of player that you think the Titans are getting?
Well, first of all, the player, I mean, I really like him. I think that it was weird. I don't know if you guys felt this out there, but just, you know, being from afar, I was just, it was weird how little attention he got.
Agreed.
He was so overshadowed in the process by obviously Shadur, but just everything else. And even I found it so funny on draft night when he's literally walking to the stage and ESPN is saying, well, wait, we got a trade. and Cam Ward got none of his spotlight. And that's just kind of, I mean, it kind of speaks to him as a player too. I mean, as a guy who, as I wrote in my Titans preview, his first college game was in front of like 3,000 fans, and his final game that season was in front of like 800 fans. He's come from basically the bottom. I had no FBS scholarship offers, as everybody knows, and I like that. I think he got lumped in with all of the other quarterbacks in this class. The whole narrative, that's not really untrue, that, oh, this quarterback class is no good, it's no good, it's no good. Well, that might be true as a whole, but there's one guy who's really, really good. I don't see any reason why Cam Ward couldn't have been a top five pick last year when there were all these fantastic quarterbacks in the draft, and a lot of them played really well as a rookie. So as a player, I just think I like the fact that Cam Ward had such humble beginnings in his college career. I like everything he's about. I like his skill set. I just think everything, I think he's a good player. I think the Titans got the right player. The situation's not great, obviously. I mean, there's a lot. But, you know, you look at it, I was kind of thinking about this before I came on. The offensive line shouldn't be that bad. A lot of first-round picks, a lot of money involved in that offensive line all of a sudden. Calvin Ridley's, he could have a worse number one receiver than Calvin Ridley. Okonkwo's a capable tight end. A couple good running backs. I think a lot of this comes down to Callahan. If he's the coach that Tennessee thought it was getting a year ago, this is his time. You can make excuses and say Will Levis just was this and that, and he wasn't a good fit and all that. But if you're the kind of quarterback whisperer you were sold to be to Tennessee, this is your time to show it. I think that's a big question, for one, whether Callahan's the right guy. But if he is, then I think he's going to help Cam Ward get all of everything out of his talent, which is he's got a ton of talent to offer.
Frank, the AFC South as a whole is a little bit of an enigma. I think, obviously, Houston is the favorite to win, but the other three have a lot of big question marks. How do you sort out the rest of that division heading into this season where, you know, Titans have a new quarterback, Colts have this quarterback competition going on, and who knows what the Jaguars are from year to year, especially with a new GM and a head coach?
Right, and I'm kind of, you know, one of the flags I'm planting this year is on Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville's going to be good. How many times have we seen a team just kind of going through the motions with a coaching staff that's just kind of checked out, and all of a sudden a new coach comes in with new energy, new ideas, and they take a big jump up? That happened in Washington. I mean, we see it happen many years. That you know, happened in Houston a couple of years ago. Now, those teams hit on a new quarterback, but you know, they brought in Travis Hunter, who I think is going to help out Trevor Lawrence a ton. I like this Jaguars team. I think they're going to be good. I really do. As long as Trevor stays healthy, this is kind of the Trevor year. Like, if it doesn't happen for Trevor this year, it's just not going to happen. Like, it needs to happen if he's going to ever be a legitimate top 10 quarterback in this league. This is kind of the time for it. And so we'll see. Houston, because part of the reason I like Jacksonville so much is Houston didn't impress me that. Second half last year, they were a pretty bad team. Now, we forget all about that because they just boat raced the Chargers in the playoffs. I don't know what the Chargers were doing that day. They had no business getting blown out like that. But Houston was a pretty bad team over the second half last year. Houston's got a great defense. I know that. But the offense has some questions. I don't know. I'm kind of lukewarm on Houston. And then I think the Colts are going to be bad. But I say that, and the Colts were 8-9 last year with some of the worst quarterback play in the NFL. So their floor is pretty high, maybe. So it's an interesting division. It's not a great division by any means, but there are some interesting teams there. And with the Colts kind of being the wild card and all of it, the way I don't know what to do with them, I don't think they're going to be good. But, you know, I hate to say this because I really want Anthony Richardson to succeed, but maybe just this Anthony Richardson shoulder injury gives the Colts kind of an out to start Daniel Jones and actually have a viable passing game.
So, Frank, you guys are rolling out your offseason power rankings at Yahoo, and today you wrote about one of the most intriguing teams to me heading into this year, and maybe not even necessarily from like being a Super Bowl competitor or anything like that, but there's a lot of change with the Raiders, and you've got Pete Carroll coming in, you've got Geno Smith coming in at quarterback, obviously Ashton Jeanty entering the fold there, and the Max Crosby situation is behind them now. So what do you make of kind of the reset with this Raiders franchise and where they're left standing on the other side of it now entering into this season?
Yeah, and I just think that they've just gotten so fed up with losing that they just want a professional football team out there, right? Like, because you look at their moves and they hired who's going to be the oldest coach in NFL history once week one kicks off, and Pete Carroll. They traded for a quarterback who I believe Geno is 35 years old now, who's kind of a middle of the road quarterback, but it's such an upgrade for him from what they had that, okay, I guess I get it. They draft a running back 6th overall. These are the kind of moves you should be making if you feel like, okay, we can contend this year. I think the Raiders' ceiling is to be a really good last place team in the AFC West, right? But yep. I just think that they got so sick of just being a laughingstock and a doormat that they just want to just get some form of winning culture there. They're so desperate for just any positive vibes that these were the moves they had to make. Like, Pete Carroll might only coach 2 years. Who knows? I know he's got – everybody talks about Pete's energy, and that's very, very true, but he's 74 years old. Like, this isn't a – I don't think he's going to coach for 5-6 years. We've never obviously seen that this happen before, so – but I think that they were willing to make that trade-off. Okay, Geno might only be our starting quarterback for 2 years. Pete might only be our coach for 2 years. But in that 2 years, maybe we can start to get the ball rolling in a positive direction because it's been rolling the wrong way for 30 years or so for the Raiders. So, I get it, I guess. It's kind of weird, but they're going to be actually a fun, feisty team. I don't think they're going to be better than 7-8 wins, but two great superstar, you know, offensive talents and Bowers and Jeanty and a quarterback who's actually an adult in the room. And they could actually be an interesting team, although one that I can't get them out of last place in the AFC West. Like, that's a brutal division.
Frank, we were talking earlier in the show about the Patriots and obviously, you know, a lot of familiarity around here with Mike Vrabel stepping into that job in year one. You know, I thought Drake May was good last year, particularly given the lack of basically having anything around him in that offense. You know, I didn't think he was exceptional or anything, but there seems to me to be a lot of, I guess, hype being the right word on the Patriots heading into this year. What do you make of that and your expectations for them in Vrabel's first year?
Yeah, and I mean, I know you guys because I visit Nashville often. You guys have legal sports betting there, so you can look and see over-under for the Patriots wins this year is 8.5 at MGM. And it's like, all right, this team has won 8 games combined the last 2 years. But I get it. Like, they had Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel should have been the Titans coach for 20 years. Like, I still just shake my head at how that got screwed up. Mike Vrabel's a heck of a coach. Like, I don't like the way the Patriots handled the situation. I thought that Rob Mayo really got the raw end of the deal, and I thought they made a joke out of the Rooney rule and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they got one of the best coaches in the NFL. Okay, well, you know, I don't like the process, but they did get Mike Vrabel, who I have a ton of respect for. So he changes that, obviously. Drake May, you talked about him. He really showed a lot. They went out, and I thought, if you were ranking, and I do, ranking who had the best draft and who had the best free agency in the NFL this year, I think the Patriots ranked number one in both categories. I thought they spent so much money to fix the defense and got some real impact players on that side of the ball. And then their draft was really, really good. I like everything about their roster building this offseason. So they've upgraded the talent from probably the worst roster in the NFL to a pretty good roster. And they have a really weak schedule this year. So you look at it and you say, okay, how could this team go from 4 wins to 9 or 10 or whatever? But I at least see the path. The talent is just night and day, and the coaching is a huge, huge upgrade. So, yeah, I think this Patriots team is going to be pretty good. I don't know if they can get the 9 wins. That's a lot to ask, but It also wouldn't shock me. It's just going to be a different Patriots team than what we've been used to seeing the last couple of years.
Talking NFL with Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports. Frank, one of the more interesting stories of the offseason is Shamar Stewart with the Bengals and the impasse that they're at. And it just seems like no one wants to blink in that situation. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the Bengals and their first-round pick?
I mean, I assume there has to be. I don't think this is going to be like a season-long holdout or anything. Like, I don't think you get to that point. This is just the Bengals being the Bengals, and they started to shed that reputation of being cheap and antagonizing their players and not being a very, you know, a professional organization a few years ago when they made the Super Bowl. But that was basically because Joe Burrow showed up. They fell in their laps, and they had one of the superstar quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think the organization has really changed. You see that the Trey Hendrickson standoff, and now you're seeing it with Shamar Stewart, where they're just – randomly decided, hey, we're putting this language into our rookie deals now. And Shamar Stewart's like, why should I have to deal with that? This hasn't happened before, and I'm not getting anything out of it. I'm not fully on board on Shamar Stewart's side here. He shouldn't be accepting this because it hasn't happened before. So why should he be the guinea pig, right? And for a Bengals team that you know, I mean, they missed the playoffs last year with the quarterback playing at an MVP level. That's almost impossible. Yeah. That is almost impossible to do in the NFL. If your quarterback plays as well as Joe Burrow did last year, 100% of the time you should make the playoffs. It is almost inexcusable not to. And what was their problem? It was defense. And now, again, you're antagonizing your first-round pick. You're having a standoff with Trey Hendrickson, who had 17 and a half sacks last year. How is the defense getting any better? How's his team getting any better? And if I'm, you know, the bigger picture here is they're picking these small fights and not seeing the big picture of, If this was the NBA, Joe Burrow would probably at some point be like, I want out of here. Trade me to the NFL version of the Miami Heat, right? Like, I don't know if Joe Burrow's ever going to get to that point where he demands a trade, but he's got to be thinking to himself, what is going on with this organization? What? I'm kind of saddled with this clown show around me. It's just a bad offseason look for the Bengals, who did the right thing paying T. Higgins and paying Jamar Chase finally, and now you just take a big step back with this stuff. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what the point here is.
Well, Frank, really good stuff, man. We're really appreciative of your time. You're kind to join us, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks so much for your perspective.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great rest of the week.
Absolutely, you as well. Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. Lots to react to there from Frank. We will do that coming up next. But first, I got a four-pack of tickets to give away to the FIFA Club World Cup match at Geodis Park coming up this Thursday night. Al Hilal taking on CF Pachuca at 8 o'clock. Be caller number 4, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, caller number 4, a four-pack of tickets to the FIFA Club World Cup match at Geodis Park coming up on Thursday night. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063, the game. Joining us this Friday as we broadcast live at the Duncan Grand reopening in Hermitage at 5205 Old Hickory Boulevard. Starting at 8 a.m., the first 100 people in line will win free coffee for 100 days, plus 1025, the game, will have your chance to win tickets to an upcoming Nashville concert as well. Also on Friday, Friday's a big day, join us at Bridgestone Arena for a party like no other and celebrate the future of Smashville at the Nashville Predators 2025 NHL Draft Party. More details at thegamenashville.com/events. And you can catch coverage that I will be a part of alongside Max Herz starting at 6 o'clock on Friday night. Draft night in Smashville, powered by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 429. So looking forward to that. We talked about that earlier in the show. But Friday night at 6 o'clock, we will have your NHL draft coverage here on 1025, 1063 the game. Appreciate Frank Schwab for being with us in the last segment there. Frank Schwab seems to be very high on Cam Ward, so good to see on that front. We'll see how that ends up playing out. And I do think Frank Schwab is representative of how most of the national media – feels about the Mike Vrabel discussion around here. I think most of the national media says, Titans, you're absolute morons for firing Mike Vrabel. Now, I said it yesterday, or earlier in the show today, I said it in the immediate aftermath of it. I would not have fired Mike Vrabel. I think Mike Vrabel had proven enough at that point where he still needed to be the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. I also don't know that I would go as far to say that he should be the head coach for 20 years, but I get the point that Frank was putting out there.
Yeah, when it happened, and still looking back, I don't think it was the right decision for the Titans to fire Mike Vrabel. I think he deserved at least one more year to try and sort things out. But the national media wasn't listening to Mike Vrabel every single day while he lost 18 of his last 24, and he kept the same shtick that he used when they were winning. And it was, I think Titans fans liked the Mike Vrabelisms and all that stuff when the Titans were playing in AFC championship games and the number one seed in the AFC. But when you go 6-18, you can't keep saying the same things. Coach better, play better. And I think he got a little bit old and a little bit tired. But no, I'm with you. I think there's a middle ground between should the Titans have fired him? Probably not. But should he be the Titans head coach for 20 years? I don't know if that was in the cards either.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Look, I think Vrabel's a good coach, and I think he will probably do a good job in New England. Now, is that going to result in a Super Bowl? I have no idea.
Is he Bill Belichick? Probably not.
Probably not. And you know, frankly, not. Drake May is – yeah, nice. Frankly, Drake May is not Tom Brady. So, like, that combo is going to be difficult to replicate in that place ever again. So I think if you're a Patriots fan, you have to understand that heading into all this. Now, the question is, like, can Vrabel in the next couple of years here, can he get them in the conversation with Baltimore and Buffalo and Kansas City and those type of teams? That's what I don't know. And really, most of that's going to come down to how good is Drake May. Like, that's what it's going to come down to. You know, we heard Frank Schwab talk about it. It is, the more you think about it, the more it's kind of amazing that the Bengals missed the playoffs last year, given how good Burrow was. He's right. Like, that should be impossible.
He had MVP
in the NFL
level numbers.
To miss the playoffs when your quarterback is playing that well. But, like, for Vrabel, that's the standard. For Brian Callahan, Cam Ward, like, that's what you're going up against. You're going up against Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. And those guys aren't going anywhere anytime soon. And you have to go through them, not around them.
Yeah. I mentioned it yesterday that the AFC and the NFC might as well be different leagues, because in the AFC, it's all about the quarterback. I think it's safe to say that five of the top six quarterbacks in the league are in the AFC. Maybe you could make an argument that Jaden Daniels could be six instead of like a Justin Herbert or something like that. But the top four, I think pretty safely, are Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson, all in the AFC. So if you don't have the quarterback, Mike Vrabel can be the greatest coach and, you know, get the most out of his team every time they go out on the field. But if Drake May is not the guy, they're not going to be playing in the Super Bowl anytime soon.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's what it is. And same thing with Cam Ward. Like, Cam Ward,
right,
eventually, can he give you that level of play or close to that level of play? Like, he doesn't have to be, you know, Mahomes specifically or specifically Josh Allen. But he's got to be, like, in that ballpark. Or you've just got to build an unbelievable roster around him. That's your path if you're the Titans.
You have to have the ability to play against those guys in a playoff situation and not feel like you have a significant disadvantage at quarterback.
Right, you're totally outclassed.
Like that, as good as Ryan Tannehill was, Ryan Tannehill against Patrick Mahomes, Ryan Tannehill against Joe Burrow in those playoff games, and Ryan Tannehill against Lamar Jackson the year before, that was always going to be the disadvantage, is that the Titans did not have a game changer at quarterback who could go out there and win you the game when you needed it in the final minutes. If Cam Ward can just be that, he doesn't have to be the league MVP, but he has to be in that conversation if the Titans are going to have a chance to make it to the Super Bowl during his tenure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're building towards. And look, I think we're a long way away. Well, I say a long way away. In today's NFL, it seems like it's getting shorter every year.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're not gonna know that about Cam Ward after year one. We're probably not going to know that about Drake May after year two. Probably.
You have a better idea after 2 years.
You have a better idea after 2 years. And I think everybody feels like they know it right now with Jaden Daniels. We'll see. Like, I'm interested in year two. Does he follow it up?
Well, CJ Stroud after year two.
Exactly.
Right. What do we feel about that?
Exactly.
Is he going to pull another year two, a year one, or neither?
The talk about CJ Stroud was that he was a top five quarterback in the NFL after year one.
And he was not.
He was not.
He was still good. And I think there's a lot that fell apart around him.
He's still their franchise quarterback.
Right.
But he's not in the tier with Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Burrow.
Right. And I that part of it, can you replicate? I mean, that's part of why these guys we're talking about are so great, is they not only replicate it year after year, they build on it. Like,
right.
Like Lamar Jackson is getting better. Josh Allen is getting better.
Yep.
And Joe Burrow is getting better. And that's a crazy thing to think about with how good they've been.
And that's why you take a chance on Cam Ward and turn down that trade package from the Giants. Because if you have any chance to get one of those guys, you don't know when the next chance is going to come. So you got to take it.
That's going to do it for us today here on the program. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.